Our guest today is Gautier, which is the stage name for Wally DeBacker, the Australian artist who, after Adele, may have the most popular song in the world right now with somebody that I used to know. He's had multi-platinum success in Australia and in Europe with his third and latest record called Making Mirrors, which has so far sold over 5 million copies worldwide, and it was just released in August. Gautier, spelled G-O-T-Y-E, is French for Walter, in its more conventional Gautier spelling. Walter is originally from Belgium and immigrated to Australia as a child, moving to Melbourne, which we have come to know as an artistic center in Australia, and ask him about his relationship with the city.
I was born in Belgium. I went to Australia with my parents when I was 2 years old, and they arrived in Sydney, but they made their way down to Melbourne over the course of a year. And then bought a house there and have lived in different sort of parts in the northeast and slowly gravitated down towards the beach southeast of Melbourne, which is where I live as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, they're originally from Bruges, which, if people know Belgium, know it's kind of a fairy tale town in a way.
It is in many ways, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. It feels like a fairy tale to visit as a tourist. Cobblestone streets.
But that's not necessarily where you live if you live there. What did they do there?
Mum and Dad did hang around Bruges a lot when I was born. They met there and, they were in an apartment there and family was around that area. And I've been back quite a few times, a little bit more in recent years because of music, but also to see family and just sort of get to know my birth town a little better.
Well, now I understand you've got a studio and a very nice piece of land a little bit outside of Melbourne.
It was a temporary thing I set up. I'd made my previous records in very small rooms in share houses, which often required a lot of, moving mattresses and couches around and being tied to my desktop PC. So this was the first record I made, I guess, where I could be quite mobile. So a lot of it was even just recorded on the go in friends' lounge rooms or, wherever I was sampling something, whether it was in the outback sampling a strange musical instrument like the Winton musical fence or... the barn was... was a more permanent place with a bit more room where I could set up all my stuff and sort of leave it there for a few years.
I've heard quotes of 2.5 years or 5 years in the making of this record, which is more accurate.
I was working on it about 2 years, 2.5 years. It was 5 years sort of since the last one was released, but then I spent so long, following up on the last album, touring, and also put out three records with my other band, The Basics.
Right.
Before starting to really work on this new Gautier record in earnest.
Now, samples have always been a huge part of what you do. Maybe even slightly less so on this album. You're playing more instruments on this?
Yeah. Applying sampling in different ways, I guess, like whether it's multi-sampling an acoustic instrument to sort of turn it into like a plug-in, a virtual instrument, and then performing off a keyboard or drum pads. I found some peculiar things, like I mentioned the Winton musical fence in the outback of Queensland.
Explain what that is.
It's like 5 metal strings, if you imagine them on wooden posts, maybe 50 metres one direction and then in an L shape 50 metres the other. And at one point on one of those stretches, the strings are also attached to this wooden resonant chamber. It's like a little cabin. And if you sort of, put recording devices up in the corner of that cabin, you get a really beautiful resonant acoustic amplification of these strings, which you can do all sorts of things with, like plucking and striking and scratching.
But it was originally designed as sort of an art installation.
Yeah, and an attempted tourist attraction for a little town very much in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Queensland. I think it was a commission from the Queensland government. They were looking for each of the towns in, those outback areas to develop some attractive, idiosyncratic, local thing to bring people there. And it was actually a Melbourne instrument designer and percussionist, a man called Graham Leake, who was commissioned to do it. And I met him after I'd sampled the fence and, showed him the track, and he was quite excited that it was being used in something he didn't expect it, to be used in. And he told me some pretty funny stories about the very varied responses that, say, some of the locals at Winton had to his creation versus some of the tourists he'd talked to.
Locals were not too into it?
Some weren't. No, he said he had a fond memory of sitting in a bar having a beer and, somebody asking him what he was doing there. He's like, oh, well, I made this fence, you might know. And the guy basically just turning to him going, I'll tell you what, mate, I reckon your fence is a bit of bull. And he just kind of went, okay, well, cheers to that.
Bottom of beer.
But it has been, there are some good videos online there have been school groups there doing sort of concert things and recordings, and parts of a community have got together around it and done things. I think Graham, actually, just in the last year, has been getting more videos that he's been involved with recording about what people there have done with the fence. But yeah, you can also see stuff in my little docker about making that song Eyes Wide Open, playing the fence and sampling it.
Cool. Look for that on the website. I want to get into the live things, but before we do that, I'd love it if you would maybe talk a little bit about some of the sounds on somebody that I used to know, because some things are not as they appear. For instance, I was reading sort of the arpeggio that is within most of the verse. Mm. I always thought it was a synth, but it apparently is not.
The arpeggio, which part do you mean? Do you mean just the back and forth?
Exactly.
Oh, that's a sample of an nylon string guitar from a Brazilian guitarist called Luiz Bonfa. He was active mostly in the 60s and throughout the 70s and quite renowned, a really amazing guitarist. If you look up Luiz Bonfa online, you see some brilliant black and white videos of just an incredible, immaculate guitar technique, a really dexterous guitar player. So yeah, it was from a record I found in a thrift shop and just, I don't know, stripping. It's kind of like a little innocuous 4-bar chord progression that starts a song of his called Seville. And then the tune goes in a totally sort of different direction, almost like a Tijuana brass, quite kind of celebratory, party kind of direction. But yeah, the first 4 notes, when I grabbed just the first 2 notes there, they pretty much inspired the lyric of the song.
And the other thing, well, I'd love to get your reaction to just how massive this song has become. And if do you tend to try to think why? I mean, you must ask yourself that. Of course, I have my theories, and I'm sure you have your theory. What is your theory?
I feel quite boring when I start distilling, you know, different perspectives on why, you know, I've broken through. I think, you know, from a pure access point of view, I guess maybe somehow I've been lucky enough that a quite peculiar, almost pop song has been given a chance through some of the often very difficult bottlenecks you can have to pass through in the music industry, and you know, maybe you have more access now through online just to directly access people, but the fact that it's had that chance to get to a lot of people's ears, they've really responded to something that's quite, I don't know. I think it has a hypnotic quality to it. I think it has a very withholding, slowly unfurling, revealing quality that people have responded to. It doesn't sort of give you instant gratification, which so much pop does try to do. And, you know, compared to so much rock and pop production these days, it's heavily compressed and super layered. It's very minimal and kind of relies very much on, you know, just the directness of a lyric and the pure dynamic of how it's very late in the game, finally arrives at a chorus.
I was going to say there's a great release when the chorus finally comes.
Yeah.
Also, and I think your decision to provide the other person's, the female's point of view in the song was brilliant, because that, of course, turns it into something else.
Yeah, I think it might have been very different had it just been a one-person song. Yeah. Yeah. Might have just come off like a guy who's really embittered and kind of a bit schizophrenic.
Exactly.
I think the fact that I guess both Kimber and I in the song are quite unreliable narrators, and as the song unfolds, bring almost everything that we say kind of into question, or at least start to make you, I think, go back and question, yeah, what's been said before is seems to be attractive to people. And perhaps, I mean, to me, seems to be, I get the feeling people seem to respond to that as an element of truth in the song. The fact that, especially after a broken relationship, or maybe even just purely, you know, even the fog of memory that, you know, can swirl around anything in one's life, leaves you with often a feeling of real uncertainty about what really was, how people felt, what was said.
And you just thought it was just a catchy song. This is somebody that I used to know.
Now and then I think of when we were together, like when you said you felt so happy you could die. Myself that you were right for me, but felt so lonely in your company. But that was love and it's a ache I still remember.
Love.
song that that they know in Holland, they know in Europe, they know in, I suppose, in the Far East as well, everywhere.
I got a pretty funny message from somebody who was holidaying in the Philippines who said he ordered a drink in a little bar and the bartender was singing the song in a weird kind of just phonetic interpretation of what he thought the lyrics were.
Oh, that's funny.
That's pretty good.
Well, you know, on this album, on Making Mirrors, this is just one element of what you do. This album is quite experimental in a lot of different ways. Obviously, you've been building your career to this point doing that. I thought I would go to one of the live tracks, which is a version of State of the Art. I wouldn't say it's a reggae vibe, but there's a little bit of an offbeat vibe to this one as well.
It's kind of a reggae rock thing to the groove. Yeah. It kind of underpins the feel of a song. Yeah, this is a song that's close to my heart because it, I don't know, it for me it has a peculiar meeting point of novelty, sound play, kind of self-reflexive songwriting, and you know, and I suppose a fairly strange subject matter. So it heads, whereas, but I still think to me, it's actually still quite a pop song. A lot of people probably would disagree with me, but just in the way it's constructed, and I think being quite catchy, and I don't know, I would love to release this as a single and see how it goes as a pop song. But I mean, really, it's on the one hand, it's a love song to an electronic organ that sits in my lounge room, the sounds of which I'm just really kind of intoxicated by. And as I was writing, it also became a little bit of a kind of meta study on future vision that you know, those pieces of technology sometimes offer, especially at a certain period in time. And I'm kind of fascinated by how those visions of a possible future so quickly can become quaint and outdated and often maybe impossible for our future generations to actually relate to. So that, I think, is kind of something I was kind of trying to sing through this weirdly voiced character.
Yes, and here he is. This is a live version of State of the Art from our guest, Gautier.
State of the art.
Home of soul. State of the art.
Listen.
State of the Art, a live version from Gautier, who's our guest today. We're talking with Wally DeBacher about this music, about this amazing latest album called Making Mirrors. So what's the challenge of making these records and playing a lot of it yourself to now you've got to play it live?
What's the challenge in the transition?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading a 5-piece band. I was reading a 10-piece band.
I was playing with a 10-piece band in Australia. Too expensive to tour overseas at the moment, so I'm playing with a 5-piece band at the moment. The challenge for me, there's a few little stages. Some of it is kind of conceptual in just terms of kind of going, well, you know, what kind of show do I want to make? Do I want to make something that's very faithful to the layering on the record and the complexity of some of the arrangements, or do I want to free things up? Do I want to strip things back? So just, you know, general approaches to what do I want the overall kind of feel of a show to be. So as it is, I guess, yeah, I have done something that mostly is very faithful to the album arrangements, and I suppose just tries to tackle head on what is a fair challenge sometimes of which sound should maybe be played on live instruments, which maybe feel so striking that they need to be recut from samples. But I think one of the main things, I guess, working with the band is just about trying to find this meeting point between acoustic and electronic instrumentation and make it all feel like a performance and make some of that clearer for the audience than maybe some electronic performances can be. Because you can see those gigs where you just don't know whether a DJ's pressing play on a laptop, or even if you're not sure, sometimes it just feels like they might be faking, they're tweaking a cutoff on a resonance knob and it's not actually doing anything, you're not hearing anything. And so, you know, there might be a great light show and some great visuals, but musically it just doesn't feel like anything's actually live. And that's fine for some forms of electronic music. But I think when me and Tim in the band, who do all the sample triggering and manipulating, it's nice to tell some stories and kind of make people aware that, oh, you know, so this interesting little gizmo here, what have you got happening over there, Tim? And he'll kind of have a play with some of the things so people can become aware that in this next track, that's where those string sounds are coming from, and that's how Tim is manipulating the length and the cutoff and, you know, that particular part. And also just me and Tim, I think, I don't know, try to find ways to ham it up, basically.
Right.
You know,
well,
so you can be very boring standing at a little pad, pressing it with your fingers. It's not as sexy as having a guitar.
No.
But I don't know. I sometimes think I kind of like that, the nerdy aspect of playing stuff like a Mallet Cat Live. It's like an electronic xylophone, and triggering samples from there. You can kind of, you know, you can kind of dance around it and have some fun with it visually. So.
Well, I was listening to these live tracks, State of the Artists, we began, how full and layered they are live.
it's you really have gone a long ways towards recreating what's on Mickey Mears.
Yeah, that's probably the most complex one. I've been proud of how we've put that together with five of us actually covering all the parts.
Okay, we're going to play Easy Way Out now. Tell me, what should we be listening for?
Well, this is a chance for Lucas and Ben in the band on guitars and bass to kind of, I suppose, rock out them more than any other track. And Tim, who plays all the keyboards and samples in my band, is doing all the sort of little interactions and string sounds. And I think I do a little 2-second xylophone interjection at one point.
This is Easy Way Out. Gautier live on a version of Easy Way Out, which you will find on Making Mirrors. And it's in the midst of a U.S. swing at this moment. Eyes Wide Open, we've talked a bit about. It's the one with the Winton musical fence. And it was also the first single, I think, at least in Australia.
Yeah.
Of course, now everything gets compared to somebody that I used to know, but it did it fare well.
Eyes Wide Open, I felt maybe disappointed. Some people, I got a sense, it got lukewarm response from some people who I could tell when they wrote reviews were clearly fans and who'd, because it had been 5 years since I'd put up, you know, anything out, had a lot of anticipation for what my new material would be. And I saw some people sort of saying, well, this is not what we expected, and sometimes that's good, but in this case, I'm not sure. Other people are like, you know, I've never liked this stuff before, but I really like this. This is a great new direction. So, I mean, you always get all sorts of responses. But it went okay. And it got played on some independent radio, and it did well in a thing called the Hottest 100, which is like a poll of people's favorite tunes on a national radio station over there.
I ask because I always like the tune. So this is Eyes Wide Open.
Oh.
A live version of Eyes Wide Open. Gautier, our guest today on the cafe, and it's great to have these live tracks, and great to meet you. Congratulations on this. It's
thanks, David.
May good things continue. Yeah, I mean, there is the one hit wonder fear that one has with something that is so massive as this, because nobody can predict it, and it is a product of the times and everything too. So, may there be a number two.
Cheers.
Are you going to take some time off to work on another record?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not very prolific, and I've generally found, you know, time spent, releasing and I guess working a record is not time I've ever found. I have a very clear direction on new material. So I do find I'm probably an introvert like that. I need to kind of round something up, have time to kind of digest and reflect, and then, I don't know, process, find a new way to, come back to it feeling fresh. So now, I guess, would be the time to try and release a record within the next year, but I don't think that's going to happen,
no,
so don't
so.
Hold your breath.
Well, thanks, and come back with whatever you come up with.
Thanks, David.